Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. As the intro says, I am Ray Bohax, the hot rod farmer from the Farm Machinery Digest, and we farm over in Hackettstown, New Jersey, Warren County. So hopefully you're having a good day today, and I know I always say that I have to think of a different greeting for all of the listeners around the world. So I do sincerely hope that you are having a good day whenever you listen to this. And if you're not having a good day, like I always tell my wife, tomorrow will be better, right? Because that's always how it is. And let me see what I wanted to discuss with you. A couple of quick little things. I'm excited to tell you that I am going to be starting it's not another podcast. So I guess I'm calling it, when I started this show, let me back up and put my tongue in my mouth. When I started this show last year, a little bit more than just not even 13 months ago, I wanted my show to be different because I wanted it to be 100% educational about farm equipment, machinery, engines, what have you, all of the mechanical side of growing crops. And I didn't want to have it where I was interviewing people, and I'm not against that. If somebody does that on their show, that's great, if that's what works for them. But I wanted this truly to be for it to be almost like you attending a seminar each week. But I also wanted to have a very casual tone, a tone like two farmers, you know, leaning over the tailgate, talking, sitting on a tailgate or over a workbench or a cafe. So I never wanted to bring anybody on the show and interview them because I felt that at that particular point, the focus of my intent for Idle Chatter would be diluted. But I do see value in talking to some people. So what I'm going to be starting after the new year, God willing, is I'm going to be adding an additional show. It's going to be in the same rotation. It's not going to be in lieu of the weekly Idle Chatter. But what it'll be on the road with Idle Chatter. And what I will do is I will hopefully find some very interesting companies that produce either machinery or engines, or anything of that sort, and go to their facility. I'm not going to do this over the telephone. I'm going to go to their facilities, and then I'm going to tour their facilities or talk to them, let's say, about a new engine technology, or about a new planter technology, or about an oil that they have or they produce. So the gamut is wide open as far as what I'm going to cover. And I think it has intrinsic value for my intrinsic value for my audience, because it'll give you the opportunity and give me the opportunity to learn about some of these unique newer app, we would call it engineering application specific. In other words, let's say Caterpillar comes out with a new engine technology and I have the ability to go there and talk to the engineers about it and then record a show live, which would be on the road with Idle Chatter, and then play that also in all the networks in addition to my weekly show, if that makes sense. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about getting out on the road and talking to some people and bringing that information to my audience. But what I also want to make clear is it is not going to be an infomercial. You know, that's one of the things when you go to a growers meeting and like every other part of the country, here in the winter, we have our growers meetings, and you go, for instance, I go to Grow Mark FS because that's the only supply place that we have around here. And they, you know, they have a meeting and they give you a nice lunch and everything. And the guy from BASF Talk stands up and he talks about his pesticide or his herbicide or his, whatever it is, whoever it happens to be. And then everybody listens to him for a couple of minutes and 5 or 10 minutes. And then they clap and he sits down and he tells you he has the best products in the world. And then the next guy stands up and he has the same type of products, but a different company. Now it's Syngenta. And they tell you, they show you their slides or their PowerPoint and they got two bushel yield bump out of this and they got 3 bushels out of this and da, 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 and they have the best products in the world. Everybody claps and they sit down. And, you know, there is a value to that because you get the opportunity to interface with the people that are selling the inputs or making the inputs that you use on your farm. So if you happen to use, let's say, like I use Acuron as a pre-emerge from Syngenta, and if I have some questions on Acuron, then I have the factory rep there to hopefully answer them. So I'm not, you know, I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm not saying it's not worth anything, but it's really truly not educational because it's an infomercial. It's a sales presentation. So I never want anything associated with idle chatter to be a sales presentation. Now, that doesn't mean that I won't have sponsors on the show, but those sponsors are vetted by me. So please know that. If anybody comes on the show as a sponsor, I have to 110% believe in that product or that brand. Otherwise, I will not let them on the show. It is, this is not a money grab for me because this is, this is like farming. This is not a money grab by no means. It's a mission that I have that I feel to educate the agricultural community about their machinery. So, but do know that anybody that I will talk to on or get involved with or have a conversation with, and what's going to be unique about that, I think, or I hope, is that it's going to be, you're going to be able to be listening to the conversation I'm going to have, let's say, with the head of engineering from whatever, Caterpillar, using that as an example, or John Deere or New Holland or whoever it may be, or a seed meter company, or a piece of tillage equipment. So I'm going to be talking to them, and then you will be listening to that conversation. It's not going to be scripted. I'm going to go there, and that's why I want to go to their facilities. I want to view what they have, and then I want to be able to record and bring to you, my audience, my questions and their responses to the things I saw in their product line. And I think that that will have great value for you. I believe it will have great value for you because it's not, won't be a sales presentation. It'll be a farmer, me, asking the person, the representative, the technical representative. I don't want to deal with a salesperson. I want to deal with a technical person. So it's going to be a little bit of a doing to make this happen today because when you contact a lot of these companies, they want to give you the PR person. And the PR person historically, I'm not saying in every instance, but historically, like the auto industry has a couple of buzzwords and they have no idea what they're talking about. I don't want that. I want to bring you value and I want to bring the agricultural community value. And if they're proud of their product and their engine or their tillage equipment or their combine or their header on a combine or the bearings that they make, whatever it may be, you know, then or the tires, then they should be able to tell us about it. And then you can make your decision based upon what they tell you, whether you choose to ever invest in that product or just an FYI to understand how it works. Understanding is the key to success in everything. So I'm excited about that. And hopefully I will get that going after the new year. But the other thing I wanted to ask of you, and I am reaching out to my audience and I want to thank you for your faithfulness. You know, every time I get in front of this microphone to talk to you for the past, I think this is the 66th or 67th show, I feel I am inadequate to have your time. And I just feel I'm so grateful that you give me your time and you listen to this show. And I always feel that I want to give more, more, more. And to tell you the truth, I always feel disappointed in myself because after the show comes out and I listen to it, and I say, oh man, I should have said this. I should have said this. I should have said that. You know, this is basically live to tape. And I do make myself a little cheat notes or a little outline of stuff to talk about this, talk about that. But I feel I'm woefully inadequate and I'm so honored to have your ear for this hour. And I mean that sincerely. And so I want this to be the best show that it possibly can be for you. And I also, I welcome your feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, because I want to make this better. And I want to make it what you need to have to be successful on the farm or ranch. And if I don't get that feedback from you, I cannot do that. But anyway, what has been brought to my attention by a couple of different listeners, and the, you know, things like this is why I have this new podcast equipment, because it was brought to my attention there was some background noise that I wasn't able to hear when I played the show back. But anyway, what I want to get to is that it's been brought to my attention, as I said, that there's been an issue with getting the podcasts to get Idle Chatter on my website. A couple of people have told me that when they go to the website, that the last listing, I think, is September 23rd. Now, I do a show every week, so we're way, way past September 23rd. So what I would ask for you to do, and I know everyone is busy, but I ask if you do have the time and the inclination to go to farmmachinerydigest.com and go under the tab for the podcast for Idle Chatter and just tell me whether you, if, let's make it easy. If you don't have the latest up-to-date shows, if your stop's around September 25th, 26th, or in the beginning of October, nothing near up-to-date, this show gets posted every Wednesday morning, so a new show is every week, and every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the show gets posted. So please, just let me know what you see on that on the website, and if it's up to date or not. If it's so, if it's up to date, then you know. If you want to send me an email, I'd love that. Be great, but thank you. Don't waste your time. And if it's not up to date, then I ask you to please let me know in what the last posting is. And I know that the FRAN network, the Farm and Rural Ag Network, have had some trouble the past just about that time, where they would go to my site to bring the show to their site. However that works, I don't know, but and they would have no listing there. So please, I ask if you do have the opportunity to go to the website. And while you're there, also check out everything that's on there. So there's a lot of other information, technical articles, all the toolbox tests, and all those other things going on. So please let me know. All right, thank you so much. I greatly, greatly appreciate that, because there's nothing worse than sending the shows out and they're going to all the other venues that host my site. But if somebody goes to my website and it's not there, then that is certainly an issue. So I want to thank you so much for doing that. All righty, let me see what else. So I told you about that. And what today's show is going to be about is the lowly harmonic balancer on the front of a crankshaft. And you know, a lot of people don't give the harmonic balancer any thought, right? I mean, they'd see it there most of the time, the front pulley for the drive belt. We used to call it a fan belt, but most engines don't have a fan belt anymore because they have an electric fan where they use a serpentine belt. But that the balancer usually holds the pulleys for the drive accessories on that engine. So what I'm going to do is we're going to be discussing in depth the lowly harmonic. What is important about the harmonic balancer is that it is there, and we're going to go into this in detail, but it is there to protect the crankshaft. And if the harmonic balancer is not doing its job, then that engine will suffer a catastrophic failure of the crankshaft. The crankshaft will actually snap in half or break at one of the journals. And then you could just take the whole engine. I don't care whether it's a big diesel in a combine or it's in your car or a lawnmower or what have you. The thing is, you could just take it and throw that whole engine away. Because if you're under load and at speed and that crankshaft breaks, it is pretty ugly. It's like a tornado going through the inside of that engine. So it's junk. So as I was saying, is that most people give little thought to a harmonic balancer. And the other term that sometimes it's called is a harmonic damper. So damper or balancer is the same term that's used interchangeably. And the harmonic balancer sits on the front of the crankshaft. Now, what needs to be understood is that the crankshaft due to the firing pulses of the engine, the combustion inside the engine, the crankshaft twists and bends and oscillates with those pulses. And the job of the harmonic balancer is to be able to take those and transfer those gyrations, we'll call it for lack of better terms, from the crankshaft into the balancer, and then to be absorbed into the balancer and then dissipated. Now, when a cylinder fires, the crankshaft goes through what's called torsional and resonant vibrations. And what a torsional vibration is think of if anybody was a Chrysler guy, right? Years ago, Chryslers didn't have front springs. They had torsion bars that would twist. So a torsional event on the crankshaft is a twisting of the crankshaft. So the crankshaft is actually twisting on itself. So if you were to take it and let's say, what could I think of? So let's say if you took a piece of wire in your hand, and you took the wire in your hand, and you clasped it, and you twisted the wire back and forth. You'll have your right hand going down and your left hand going the other way and twisting it back and forth. That's actually what's happening with the crankshaft with every firing event. So when cylinder one fires, the crankshaft twists. When that event is over, it twists back the other way. When the next one in the firing world, let's say it's cylinder eight fires, the same thing. The crankshaft is constantly twisting back and forth. And the key is that inside, you know, we talk, and I have to bounce around in this too, so otherwise it's not going to make any sense. So please bear with me and try to follow along. Is that in an engine, the combustion event is based upon the amount of the horsepower and torque, the amount of work that the engine can do is the proper way for me to say it, is based upon how powerful that combustion event is, and that's registered in cylinder pressure. So the more power that the engine is making, now keep in mind that an engine is passive. It's only going to make the power that it needs to do the task at hand. So you could have a 1,000 horsepower engine, but at idle, it may only be making 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 horsepower. But when an engine is worked, so you're out in the field and you've got this combine and it's cutting 500 bushel per acre, right? We wish, right? 500 bushel per acre corn. It's harvesting that. So that engine is really loaded and working. It's making a lot of power. To make a lot of power, it has to burn more fuel. And that fuel, in turn, will create more cylinder pressure, which will work against the piston and drive the crankshaft and that energy will be transferred over to the crankshaft. So in essence, what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is that the greater the load on the engine, the more twisting and more torsional effect that it has on the crankshaft. So when the engine is being worked, the torsional and harmonic input into the crankshaft is much greater than when the crankshaft or the engine is at idle. So now torsional is twisting, and then so the crankshaft goes through a torsional twisting moment with each firing event, and also goes through what is called resonance, R-E-S-O-N-A-N-C-E, resonance. So resonant vibrations. And a resonant vibration is a vibration that you could attach a frequency to. So in essence, what I am talking into right now to record this show is what is called a dynamic microphone. And the dynamic microphone, as I understand it, when I bought it, works on resonance, that it resonates, that it's shaking inside. And that is what actually allows it to record my voice or whatever sound. So we have a resonant vibration. And I don't want to get into a crazy amount of physics here, but think of a resonant vibration as a vibration going up and down. So if you were to take your hand and move your hand up and down like this, move your whole wrist up and down, then that's a resonant vibration. So like in a car, when a tire is out of balance, you feel a vibration, correct? That is a resonant vibration. And then a vibration in most instances is measured in frequency in hertz. And hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, like the car rental agency, hertz is cycles per second. So how many cycles per second? Now remember, a cycle would be, when you're talking about a vibration, is the amplitude up and then back down to its normal rest spot. So it has to go up and then down. That would be one cycle. So if it goes up and doesn't come back down, then that is not a full cycle. And that's registered in hertz, which is cycles per second. So you could have cycles per second, you have cycles per minute, it's how many cycles, all right? But hertz generally is cycles per second. So the thing is that if you look at a crankshaft firing, it is going to be twisting and it's going to be vibrating up and down, all right? So vibrating up and down. And if we don't take that vibration from that crankshaft, then what is going to happen? It's going to end up stressing that crankshaft. It's going to be stressing the bearings. It's going to be transferred to all aspects of that rotating and reciprocating assembly, and it's going to wear it. But that crankshaft, by bending like that and keeping that energy, that torsional and harmonic energy inside, not being able to send it someplace, all right, will fracture and break. And it could break very quickly. You'd be surprised how quickly a crankshaft could break because of harmonics. And that is one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why, as an aside to this, the rotating assembly inside an engine is balanced, like a tire is balanced. Now, even when it is balanced, which means that there is equilibrium of mass and equalness of the mass, but the effects of that combustion event, that cylinder pressure pushing down on that piston, is going to be twisting that crankshaft and causing this harmonic, this vibration in it. So the job of the harmonic balancer or the dampener is to be able to absorb this vibration and transfer it into this mass that is in the front of the crankshaft. So to do that, the harmonic balancer needs to be interference fit to the crankshaft. So it has to be interference fit, and it, because if we're not interference fit, if it was loosely fit to the crankshaft, it would not be one with the crankshaft, and it would not be able to absorb these torsional vibrations and these harmonics, these cycles per second, these vibrations up and down. Alrighty? So its job is to take these vibrations, these harmonics, we'll use the word harmonic, but take the harmonics and the twisting and bending out of the crankshaft, that energy out of the crankshaft, and put it into this harmonic balancer. Now, the idea of the harmonic balancer is to be able to take this and then dissipate this energy. And if it dissipates this energy, then the engine will be a happy camper. If the harmonic balancer is not effective at dissipating the energy, then what will happen is that a good majority of those harmonics and that twisting effect and that energy from the twisting will stay inside that crankshaft, and over time it will break it. So the first thing that I want to bring up today, after I went through this for 20 minutes, right? The first thing now. the thing is that what you need to understand, and we're going to get into this, is the harmonic balancer is a consumable. A lot of engine manufacturers, specifically diesel engine manufacturers, will tell you that after so many hours or so many miles, that the harmonic balancer needs to be replaced. So do not think of it as a lifetime, forever part of that engine. And the mistake that a lot of people make is that when they rebuild an engine, they reuse the harmonic balancer, the harmonic dampener. And they say, well, you know, here's a piece of heavy steel, and, you know, what's wrong with it? We're going to put it back on, paint it and make it look good and put it back on. But that does not mean it still has the ability to absorb and cancel out those harmonics in the crankshaft. So the first thing that I want you to do is become familiar with all of your engines on the farm. And for the most part, automotive style engines do not tell you to replace the harmonic dampener at a certain mileage. They don't say at 100,000 miles, put a harmonic dampener. But if you are rebuilding that engine, or you have it apart, the rotating assembly apart, it would be a very good idea to put a new harmonic dampener in. And I will be telling you why in a couple of minutes. But on your larger farm equipment, and specifically they all have diesel engines, with diesel engines, is because the cylinder pressure is so much higher, and because the engine is worked under load for so much longer than a car engine, is that it is imperative that that harmonic balancer dampener has the ability to effectively to quench and cancel out that torsional and harmonic vibration in the crankshaft. And as I said many times already in the show today, if it doesn't, the first thing that you will do is you'll have to start, you'll see a lot of wear in the bearings of that, specifically the main bearings, because that crankshaft is twisting up and down. And as it's twisting and moving back and forth and up and down and shaking and oscillating, is that it's going to be taking up the clearance in that bearing, and it's going to be, I'll say, metal to metal contact. It'll be metal from the journal and contact with the babbit of the bearing. It'll actually displace what's called the oil wedge or the oil film that's supposed to be separating it, because it's being twisted back and forth and bouncing around. And also that twisting action over time will actually wear everything and actually lots of times alter the thrust, the free play in the crankshaft. So there's a lot of damage from that, not being able to control those motions. And then, so you need to look at your equipment and look at all of your engines and look at the manufacturer's service procedures for the harmonic dampener. So if they say it, 5,000 hours, 500,000 miles, whatever it may be, that you need to change this dampener, then I would strongly, strongly suggest doing that, because you have the very good possibility of taking that engine out. And nobody wants to blow up a $30,000, $40,000 diesel engine for $500 or $600, $700 harmonic balancer. So you need to first look at that. The second thing, what I want you to do is that if you, as I said before, reiterating that if you are rebuilding an engine or have it apart, it's a very good idea for you to be able to put a new harmonic dampener on there. Now we're going to break away for a minute, because the thing is, that's great. So you're going to put a new one on a diesel engine, or you're going to put a new one on this gasoline engine that you have a part for some reason. Now, within engineering, and to tell you the truth, this was a term that kind of came from the electronics industry. And it was actually, I think the term, or the, I don't want to say the term, the metric to measure something. And it's called a Q, like the letter Q, like in Queen, Q factor, right? And the reason why I'm telling you that is that the Q factor is a way for the effectiveness of the harmonic dampener to be measured. And it's a little bit abstract, so don't be overly concerned with understanding every aspect of it. I'm just going to touch on it briefly, because I'm not going to go into advanced physics in this and engineering. But the Q factor could be considered as the rate of energy oscillation absorption and how quickly they die out. So think of a tuning fork. So the Q factor is how much, the rate that it could absorb this energy, the twisting and resonant vibration, the torsional and resonant vibration, the crankshaft and the firing pulses. And then, so it's how quickly they die out. So does it keep it in there for a long time, or does it keep oscillating and shaking and vibrating, or does it cancel them out right away? So what's going to happen is that if as far as a Q factor is concerned, Q, letter Q again, a high Q factor means that the oscillations die out very slowly. A low Q factor means that the oscillations die out faster. So the Q factor is going to identify. So let's say if you had a pendulum and you was having a pendulum and you hit a pendulum and it was in the air. All right, so it's just in the air in the atmosphere, and you hit it, and boom, boom, it shakes and vibrates, and it makes a sound and vibrates for quite some time. It's 10 seconds, 15 seconds, depending upon a lot of factors, and the pendulum eventually stops moving. Now, if you took that same pendulum and you put it in water, in a pot of water, and then you hit it, what would basically happen? It would move once or twice, and then the water would actually stop the pendulum from moving, and it would have no movement whatsoever. So in essence, that pendulum that has a high Q factor, all right, would be the one that is in air, and once you hit it, it keeps shaking for a long time. The one that you have submerged in a pot of water would have a low Q factor, so that the oscillations from you hitting it right die out very, very quickly. So high Q means that the oscillations last a long time. A low Q means that they die out very quickly. And why I'm telling you this is that I did a show on it probably last year about why you should use OE parts. Now, the thing is that when you go, so you said, I listen to Ray, I listen to Hot Rod Farmer, I'm going to put a new harmonic dampener on this engine, whatever it may be, whatever brand you want to think of. And you go to the dealership and you say, how much is this harmonic dampener? And they say, it's $600, all right? So, and you say, oh my God, $600, I don't want to spend $600 for this because this is basically just like an insurance policy, right? And I don't want to hurt this engine. So now you go online and you find this, you find a harmonic dampener for that same engine, same application, some kind of imported one from China, right? And it's $150. You say, great. Instead of this $600 dampener, the OE dampener, I'm buying this $150 dampener from China and I'm going to put it on my engine. Well, the thing basically is that there's a lot of physics and a lot of science that go into that harmonic dampener. And then, and I'm not saying that the one that you're buying from the internet for $150 is bad, but I'm saying there's a very, 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 very high rate of probability that the Q factor, and that's why I told you about it, that the Q factor of that harmonic dampener is not correct for that engine. And the thing is that so it's not absorbing and dissipating the energy from the torsional and resonant vibrations in that crankshaft properly. And it may actually be acting like a storage of them because you want to take them out of crank and dissipate them. You don't want it to get in there and start to get its own frequency and start shaking. So to be blunt, I would not trust an aftermarket cheapo harmonic dampener on any of my engines. Now, that doesn't mean that you cannot buy an aftermarket harmonic dampener, but you need to buy one that is from a reputable company, and the fact that the reputable company and that is made specifically for that engine that you have confidence in. And it has to be your decision. Now, to go to the other side of the aisle in the race engine business, right, there are a lot of companies like Fluid Dampener, TCI, what have you, that made race engine harmonic dampeners. And those dampers were tuned meaning that they were designed to absorb, their Q factor was designed to be efficient at high cylinder pressure and high RPM. So don't get fooled into the fact that you think that because this is a racing damper, right? Let's say for a gas engine, that it's better than the stock damper. Lots of times it isn't. Matter of fact, Roush from Roush Racing, Roush Anatrol did a big analysis a number of years ago. There's an SAE paper on it, and they tested a whole bunch of aftermarket dampers versus a stock Ford damper. And at the standard operating range that you would see in a passenger car or a pickup truck, the stock Ford damper had a much better Q factor, had a much better, it was more effective at removing the harmonics from the crankshaft and the twist from the crankshaft and dissipating it quicker instead of storing it and then putting it back into the crank on the next event. So the thing is that, so keep that in mind. So, you know, the take-home message here is that in life, you get what you pay for. And there's so many poor quality aftermarket parts. And the thing basically is that if you look at this, you know, the dampener probably looks fine. I mean, it looks fine. You take it out of the box, you take it out of the box and it looks fine. You know, it fits on there. You press it and with everything, it works. It seems to be good. The bolt holes line up, everything lines up. Then you think that you hit a home run. But the fact of the matter is that just because it's a harmonic dampener doesn't mean that it has the efficiency. And that's why I took the time to tell you about the Q factor. Nobody's going to tell you what the Q factor of that harmonic dampener is. The only thing that you could take to the bank is that if you have a John Deere combine and you go to John Deere and you buy a John Deere replacement harmonic dampener for that engine, you know that it's performance, meaning its ability to deal with the torsional, the twist, and the harmonics of that engine and that application are going to be right on the money. When you go and buy an aftermarket piece, all bets are off. And I've seen many engines get destroyed over the years because the person had good intentions and they put a new harmonic dampener on. They were doing something. They were rebuilding the engine, what have you, and they put a new harmonic dampener on. And then 5 or 10,000 miles later, the crankshaft breaks on this engine, and it breaks on this engine because it was a cheapo harmonic dampener that had the wrong... It would be like spraying dicamba on corn, all right? So, you know, it's just because, you know, it goes in the sprayer and comes out of the tip doesn't mean it's right for that crop. And the same thing is with, you know, with the harmonic dampener. And I don't want you to go and ruin an engine because you wanted to save a couple of $100 on a harmonic damper. And look, I know nobody likes to spend extra money, and I understand that. And you know, today it really is a problem. You know, 30, 40 years ago, it really wasn't as much of a problem as it is today, even 25 years ago, because the market is flooded with so much junk parts, and the junk parts from China, and they're plain and simple English, they're crap, all right? They may look good in the box. They come out of the box and they fit on there. Sometimes they don't fit. Lots of times it's a blessing in disguise if they don't fit because it would have messed up your engine. But they fit on there, and you know, and you look at it and say, okay, this is great. I got this on there. And specifically, you know, with something like a harmonic dampener, because what I tell people is that, you know, I've had people that I've known and that have gotten pancreatic cancer. And I'm certainly no doctor or an oncologist, but I do know empirically through life's experiences that usually with pancreatic cancer, by the time you see or feel or experiencing the symptoms, that it's way too late and it's a death sentence. That it doesn't present, it doesn't really show any symptom that makes you want to go to a doctor prior to that. And so once it shows itself, you know, once it shows itself like a major nutrient deficiency in a crop, once it shows itself, it's all over, the yield is over, well, your life is over. The thing is with a harmonic damper is that once it shows itself with a busted crankshaft. So it's like the pancreatic cancer of engines. And it's not going to, I mean, yes, maybe you will, if you're very astute, maybe you will say, geez, you know, I change this dampener on here, and this motor doesn't seem to be as smooth. I race it up to 2,000 RPM, I start to feel the harmonics. Well, get that damn thing the hell off of there, because you are going to have a problem. And don't ignore that. Don't ignore that. If you put an aftermarket dampener on, you start to feel something. But the whole thing basically is that then again, like the pancreatic cancer, when you feel it inside that piece of equipment, car, truck, combine, sprayer, what have you, irrigation pump, you put your hand on the engine, say, geez, this thing's gonna be shaking more harmonic, high frequency, very, very fast harmonic in here. All right, the thing is that if you're feeling it there, if you are feeling it, forget about it. The engine crankshaft is going through hell, all right? The bearings are going through hell. Everything is going through hell because by the time you know about it, you could feel it. It is very, 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 very bad. So keep that in mind, is that you need to look at, to recap this, the whole idea of the harmonic dampener is to be able to control the torsional bending of the crankshaft and to quench and absorb and remove the resonant vibrations that are a natural occurring effect of the combustion event inside an engine. The dampener must be interference fit for it to be interference fit with the crankshaft for it to transfer, because if it's loose, it's not going to transfer that. So now the other thing I want to touch on before I give you some more facts about this, you know, and this is, you know, to me, this is a lot like cover crops. And, you know, I plant cover crops. I got a 5-way blend on my farm. And I've gone to a lot of these cover crop seminars, and I'm not poo-pooing them because I love to learn. But, you know, I'm not a plant physiologist. I need to know, I need to accept the value of cover crops, that all the things that, you know, that science has shown that it's good for my soil health, it's good for compaction, it's good for the beneficial fungi, the microbes in the soil, the earthworm. I know that's all there, and I just need to accept that and plant cover crops. I don't need to, you know, some of these guys belabor this and they go on about this and this and this and that for 5 hours. And, you know, I need to accept that's that's good for my soil. There's nothing negative about a cover crop as far as I'm concerned. Some people have some negatives about trying to kill them off, what have you. But the fact of the matter, the benefits are there. All right. So the benefits have been documented. The sky is blue, right? All right. And we all need to discuss that. You know, water flows downhill. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. We got to take that for granted and then move on and say, we're going to use cover crops in our field. Now, the thing based on our farm. Now, the other thing is the same thing is that you need to understand that the harmonic dampener becomes worn. And I don't mean worn as far as its slip fit is concerned. Its ability to absorb the harmonics from that crankshaft become negated, because usually most dampers have some sort of rubber material in them. And there's a number of different types of dampeners out there. But what I wanted to talk about before I go off on a tangent is that when you remove a harmonic dampener from a crankshaft, you need to use a puller. You know, I've seen guys in there, they go in there with two big pry bars and they're prying against the crank and doing this and doing that and what have you. Not good. But what's even worse is they don't invest in a harmonic damper installer, and they beat the hell out of it with a sledgehammer to put it on the crank. And that is the biggest no-no, because what it does is that it actually damages the damper, all right? It damages the damper from you hitting it, and the type of damage could be from peening it over or having it come loose inside or a whole cadre of other things. But you're also taking that crankshaft. Every time you're wrapping it with that sledgehammer, you're ramming that crankshaft backwards, and you're ramming it against the thrust of the crankshaft, and you're taking the flywheel of the flex plate. Then if it's an automatic transmission, you're pushing that flex plate, that torque converter, back into that pump that we used to call it the front pump, because there used to be two pumps in an automatic, but the pump on the transmission, if it's a clutch, it's not good. The proper way to remove a harmonic dampener is with a puller, the proper puller, and the proper way to install it is with an installation tool that presses it back on. All right. So please, if you find any value in the show today, then you're gonna change a dampener on one of your engines, and you plan on beating it on and off, you're prying it off with two big pry bars. Hey Joey, come over here, get the other crowbar. You lean on this one, and then you're gonna put it on with a maul that you use to chop firewood. Forget about it. Then leave the old one on there. You'd probably be better off. But keep in mind that there are different types of dampeners, and what I mean by that is that what they use to absorb those vibrations. Most OEM dampeners, original equipment dampeners, consist of they have an outer mass that's bonded or vulcanized into an inner hub, and so it's got a rubber in there. An aftermarket dampener, performance type of dampener, meaning like for a racing application, all right, usually consists of a housing it's a mass that's attached or mounted to a housing. The housing could be steel, it could be aluminum, could be titanium, and that there's different types of ways that they control the vibration. Some are just steel, the mass, and the chemical, the composition of the steel. I want to say the chemical, the molecular composition of the steel. And another type has a liquid in it, and another type has a gel in it, and some have a rubber mass in there. And so you need to look at this damper, and you have to determine what kind it is. If it's a rubber ring damper, which a lot of OE smaller gasoline engines had, Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, what have you, is that you want to take the rubber and you want to try to take a screwdriver and awl and poke at it and see whether it's very resilient. And you know, to me, that's like taking soil in your hand and saying, "Oh, I guess it looks pretty good." All right, if you could find that the rubber is too hard with a screwdriver tip or an awl, forget about it. That's been too hard from 5 years ago. Once you feel it with the screwdriver tip or the awl, it's way gone, and that rubber is doing nothing. So that is why these are consumables, because if it is a rubber type of damper, it is going to dry out that rubber from thermal cycles and from time, and it's going to lose its resiliency, and it's going to become hard, and it's not going to absorb those torsional movements, is probably a better word, and those harmonics that are in it. So as we come to a close on this part of the show, what I want to just bring to you very succinctly is that number one, that the harmonic damper, no matter what kind it is, has only a useful life. Check your equipment, service manuals, service instructions. Most diesel engines, larger diesel engines, give you a time interval, whether it's hours or miles, to replace that damper. Follow that interval, please. Please, you'll be, other than changing the oil and the antifreeze, it's probably the best thing you could do for any engine. Alrighty? If you're taking the damper on, if you need to take the old damper off and install a new damper, or anytime, even if you're putting the old one back on, because you're doing a timing chain or something like that, you need to use a remover, a puller, and you need to use an installer. You're not going to pry on this thing, and you're not going to beat the hell out of it with a maul to get it back on there, because it needs to be an interference fit. I've seen guys actually take a Dremel and go in there and grind them, because they think that the nut in the front is what's going to hold it on 100%. The nut is going to be the safety to keep it on there. But once you open up that cavity and make it not that tight interference fit, the idea for it to absorb the harmonics goes down dramatically. So it's making it useless, all right? And then the other thing, basically, is that, you know, spend the extra couple of dollars and buy a proper OE-style harmonic dampener. So you figure, let's say if you're doing this every 5,000 hours on a piece of equipment, all right, the thing is that, you know, this is not something like it's fuel. You say, I'm going to go through 100 gallons a day. So if the unit has 5,000 hours on it right now, and the company calls for you to replace the dampener 3,000 or 4,000 hours, and you're not going to replace it again for another 3,000 or 4,000 hours, it's cheap insurance for you to be able to put the factory one on there and not have the harmonics going into that crankshaft. Now, also, if you do have an engine apart and you have a front oil leak on an engine, keep in mind that it's very hard to believe this, but the actual seal, the front timing case seal, does have the ability to actually cut a groove in the snout of the harmonic damper and will cause it to leak oil. All right, so the thing basically are, there are sleeve kits that you could buy for that for about $10 or $15 to sleeve it and put a sleeve over it so it doesn't leak oil anymore. But my contention basically is that if you wore through that and the seal cut it, that dampener is old enough that it needs to be replaced. So it's not something that you want to fool around with. So please, if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. Harmonic dampener, the pulleys are usually on it. Very, very, very important. It's going to either be friend or foe to your crankshaft. So the thing is that you want to be able to have that, and it has to be fresh, and it has to be able to be absorbing the harmonics properly, and it has to be able to dissipate them in quick order. So keep that in mind. And please, as I said, any questions or any concerns with that, just let me know, and we will we'll take care of it. Alrighty. So now we are going to get ready for the toolbox test. But before we get ready for the toolbox test, that I want to tell you that it is brought to you by Agro Liquid. And Agro Liquid is a high performance fertilizer company. And they are located in Michigan, and they are farmers. The Bancroft family were farmers. But Agro Liquid, its Q factor is right there. Its Q factor is perfect. It's perfectly calibrated crop nutrition, superior quality, superior delivery, and superior results. And in agriculture, we all know that superior results are yield. And then if you want to have yield, you have to have the right fertility. If you want to have crankshaft life, you have to have the right Q factor and harmonic dampener. So please, I ask you to just remember that Agro Liquid is sponsoring the toolbox test, and it has nothing to do with fertilizer. It's only because they believe so much in wanting to have the farmer be successful. And that is why they have come on board and they're sponsoring this toolbox test. It has nothing to do with fertilizer, this test. It has to do with engines. And they are our sponsor. So check them out. But before we get into our toolbox test, we have to listen to Tex Rabinowitz from Ripsaw Records. And he is going to sing the Hot Rod Man.
I'm a hot rod man. Yeah, I'm a hot rod man. Look out, little mama, gonna get you if I can.
There he is, Tex. He is our hot rod man to all you hot rod farmers. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to read you the question from the toolbox test, and this is question 5 from test number 1. So it is appropriate for this time of year. Alrighty, it is a cold winter day, and you are working in the shop converting your planter over to electric drive meters. You followed all the instructions and hooked the wiring harness up as stated. When you test run the system, you notice that a few of the meters seem to be turning slower than all of the others, even though they are all set up for the same population. All right, interesting. There is no rush about fixing this, so you figure the next time you're in town, you will bring it up at the coffee shop. You check the voltage to each electric motor, and it is fine. Each farmer has a different thought. Who is correct? Right, so the problem is you put new electric meters on the planter, you're converting it over, you're test running them, and you notice that some of the row units are turning slower than the others, even though they are set for the same population. Farmer A tells you the wires may be too long and the voltmeter is not telling the truth. Farmer B says that the electric motors must be made in China and are bad. Farmer C says to look at the schematic and do a voltage drop test on the ground circuit of the motors that are running slowly. Farmer D says that the tractor engine was running too slowly and the hydraulic flow to the planter's alternator was not great enough. Alrighty, so those are our 4 choices, and I always say do not be concerned whether it's farmer A, B, C, or D. Just be concerned with what you think that the proper answer is. And we will, and I will give you the proper answer at the end of the show after our special delivery segment. And as I always tell you, special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a 4th-generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar design, AD2 technology, and now the Firestone of replacement tracks. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. Trust your soil to Firestone, and trust your crankshaft to a good harmonic damper, I may add. Alrighty, so I have 2 letters here. Hopefully I could get through both of them. All right. And the first one is from Mike Werner. And he communicated with me a while back, and he had some questions. And he's basically, I'll read his letter to you because otherwise it won't make sense. He had contacted me and asked me to do a show on batteries. And I did do a show on batteries last year, and I referenced him to that, and I asked him to, if he got a chance to listen, if he got a chance to listen to it, and if there's any questions or anything that he felt that I didn't cover, that he should contact me. So this is what he wrote. Hi Ray, this is perfect, and I listened to probably 80% of the podcast but missed this one. Now I understand why our 4-wheeler battery has sudden death syndrome, given how it's used versus the zero-turn mower. A few years back, we had a pickup in for an oil change, and they said the battery needed to be replaced. This was at the dealership, and I told them no. Well, after a number of oil changes at the same dealership and with nothing mentioned about the battery, and around 2 years later, the battery finally did die. The pickup had not been used for a while before that oil change when they said that it needed to be replaced. So I figured it just needed to be used a bit more with no knowledge as to why that would make a difference. But he has some questions here. All right, so here is 3 questions. Number 1, does it help with battery life to remove batteries in the wintertime and store them in a warm area on equipment you do not use during the winter? Okay, the thing is that the answer to that basically is that yes and no. All right, no first. It makes no difference that you keep that battery in the cold or take it out and put it in the warm. It's not baby chick. You don't need to do that. The thing basically is that if you live in a very cold climate, and I believe Mike lives in Minnesota, and it's going to be, let's say, you have a piece of equipment that's in a shed, and it's going to be, you know, 10, 20 below for a long period of time, then if that battery is weak, that the amount of charge, the electrolytic activity in that battery is weak, then what will happen will have a tendency to freeze and crack. And if the battery is fully charged, then you're probably not going to have any benefit whatsoever from removing it and putting it in a warm place. If the battery itself is not fully charged and is weak, or it's older and the cells are sulfated and it's electrolytic action. So in other words, think of the electrolyte in the battery. If it's alive, it's like soil fertility. It's like soil microbes and soil beneficial fungi or moving water. It doesn't have a tendency. It can eventually freeze, maybe at 100 below zero, but it's not going, its freeze point is going to be much lower. And the only benefit that you would have is that it will not freeze and crack. Now, keep in mind that cold will sap some energy from a battery, all right? But once it warms back up and you go to start that piece of equipment, you may have to charge that battery, you may not, but that would be the only benefit that you would be seeing. So to answer your question, does it help to remove the battery in the winter and store it? In most practical cases, no, except if it's an older, weaker battery and you're trying to get another year or so out of it. His second question is, I have heard shaking the battery once in a while helps with battery life. Is that true? Well, that's kind of like an old wives' tale, because a battery will form sediment, and that sediment will become from the deterioration of the plates that sit in the electrolyte and the acid, and they deteriorate, and they do have some sediment form on the bottom. Where that came from is that if you had a battery that had a lot of sediment in it, then a lot of the plates were degraded already, and that sediment would act as an insulator, and it would insulate the plate from the electrolyte, so the chemical action could not take place. So there used to be a theory of saying, well, if I shook the battery up and moved that sediment around and put it in solution, then there'd be more of that plate exposed to the electrolyte, and that battery would have more potential energy in it. I guess in theory that's true, but at that particular point, if you have so much sediment in that battery is basically shot. And there's too much of those plates have already deteriorated, and the surface area of those plates are non-effective. So if you had to, so if you were stuck on the side of the road someplace, you said, well, I'm going to try to shake this thing up and get this engine to start. Well, maybe if you're MacGyver and you remember that TV show MacGyver and you wanted to get it going, maybe it would help you. But for all practical purposes, if you have so much sediment in that battery is not long for this world. And anytime you put either a heavy load on it or a temperature extreme, that battery is going the way of a dodo bird. So to answer your question, don't worry about shaking it. And also his third question was that he heard putting a charger or trickle charger in a battery can help as well. Is that true? Well, it's like I say, if the battery is going to be cold and outside, you would always want to keep it as fully charged as possible to lower its freeze point temperature. All right, but other than that, putting a trickle charger on a basic lead acid battery, other than saying, well, I'm keeping a trickle charge, so in case I do need this vehicle or this engine or this piece of equipment in the middle of a snowstorm and I haven't started the battery and sat out in 10 below zero for 3 months, they would have more of a charge in. And yes, there's a benefit to it. But if you're just storing a piece of equipment over the winter, there's real no need to trickle charge it. If it's a more modern piece of equipment, it has a parasitic drain, let's say like onboard computers or what have you, that always are staying active and staying alive, then the trickle charger or actually a maintenance charger would be much better, because a maintenance charger will actually ramp off and come down to no state of charge, whereas a trickle charger is always putting a little bit in. So to answer your question as far as that is concerned, is that it's not certainly not necessary. I don't keep trickle chargers on anything. All right, at that particular point, I think that if you have a good battery in it, it will be fine. And to prove this to you is that you could see car dealerships and what have you, is that they'll have a car sitting there for a month, month and a half, tractor dealers. And like I said, other than a parasitic drain of onboard electronics, that would be an issue. But then you could also just disconnect the ground cable from that piece of equipment and open up that circuit, and those onboard electronics would not kill that battery. But most vehicles today, or most applications today, that if it's a good battery and it's got the proper current draw, the cranking amps would have you the proper size as far as potential energy is concerned. It'd probably take 3 or 4 months with a parasitic drain of onboard electronics to kill it. And on an older piece of equipment, when you shut the key off that there's nothing happening, then forget about that. You don't have to worry about the whatsoever. But do whatever is going to be best for you. And sadly, we are just about out of time, so I will not get to that second letter, which is a letter from, the gentleman in Ontario, and I know I'm going to kill his name. His first name is Simon. I'm not going to kill that, and I would pronounce it Cowenberg, and he has a problem with a Ford diesel pickup truck with starting, and I'm going to open up a dialogue with him over the email, but I also wanted to share his letter with you, so I'm going to do that next week. Alrighty, so now the answer to our toolbox test question, remember, is that we installed these electric drive meters. A couple of them are running slowly, even though the population is set the same on the controller. So Farmer C is correct. And the most likely reason is that a DC circuit uses voltage and ground. If a ground circuit is weak, meaning it has high resistance, then all of the voltage will not get to whatever the load is, in this case, the electric motors. A voltage drop test is the only accurate way to check a ground circuit. So Farmer C is correct. What needs to be done on that planter is that Farmer needs to check the voltage drop on those ground circuits for those slow running meters. And if the voltage drop is less than 0.2 volts, then the ground circuit is good and the problem is elsewhere, and it probably is the meter or internal friction. If it's more than 0.2 volts, then that ground circuit is weak. And if that ground circuit is weak, that meter is going to be turning slowly. So listen, I want to thank you so much. I'm trying to keep this show at about an hour. I want to thank you so much for listening, and know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. Have a great week, and thanks for listening.